Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host again, Ian Lowens, one of the Children's Emergency Department consultants based in Derby. And I'm delighted to be joined tonight by Mariel Tallhurst Cleaver, who's an ST7 in emergency medicine based in Alderhay. Good evening, Mariel. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. So thank you for coming on the podcast. And I saw you present a really interesting project, that's the word I'm looking for, at the DFTB19 conference, which was all about periorbital cellulitis. How did that come about? How did that start?
Thanks for having me. And thank you for saying such kind things about my presentation at DFTB. So I got involved with a project because I basically just replied to a WhatsApp message which came up on our WhatsApp group amongst the paediatric emergency medicine registrars. So we've got like a national group which we're in, and Tom Waterfield, who has done the PIC study, had put a message up saying, would anyone like to get involved to do the first ever trainee-led research project with Peruki being a research network for the UK and Ireland of paediatric emergency medicine. And Tom at the time was the trainee representative on the executive committee. So I had been thinking about doing research for a while. Like, I'd always thought it would be nice to get a bit more involved, but I wasn't sure sort of how to make that next step. So I just basically responded to that WhatsApp message and said, yes, I'd be keen. And then got linked into the kind of meeting. We had a teleconference about it, which was great. So it turned out that we all put ideas forward. And my idea, which was to look into periorbital cellulitis, got picked. So I went from sort of just vaguely saying, oh yeah, I'd be keen to get involved, to then leading the project in the space of a couple of weeks, which was interesting.
Right. So it wasn't even a project when you replied to the WhatsApp.
No, it wasn't even an idea. All that Tom was on the exec committee, and they'd said, look, we really think that the trainees are being underrepresented from a research point of view, and we'd like to kind of have a pilot project that is trainee-led. So the trainees decide on a project, and then it's, you know, they'll have support, but it's going to be trainee-led, and see what happens, really, just as a sort of pilot. So that we didn't even have a topic. We just came up with one.
Right. And I guess that, even before you start, that sort of shows the power of, it's not quite social media, but certainly WhatsApp. You know, people don't reply to emails, but they'll reply to text, they'll reply to WhatsApp, won't they?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, we're really lucky having that group, actually, because all sorts of things come up on it. But I think this is the thing about getting involved. And one of the things I said at DFTB was about our project all entirely ran via email, social media and teleconferences. We have never met formally face-to-face to do anything. And I think that's one of the great things nowadays, is you don't need to have someone in your hospital. And particularly for trainees who are moving around all the time, it's really difficult to get involved with something, because then, you know, you move and it's hard to keep that momentum. So it's nice to see that things can be done entirely via sort of social media and via email, and you don't need to see people face to face.
Yeah, that's a really important point, I think, because as you say, certainly in my training, you kind of vaguely touched on a bit of research, but you the problem being, by the time it's set up, you move on to the next place and it loses momentum. Having that ability to contact people that way makes it potentially so much easier.
Yeah, and also I think just reaching out, not having to have something that you've, you know, set your heart on or that you've already planned, just literally having those groups or where you can reach out and say, I'm interested to do a project. Does anyone else want to get involved? And then, you know, you can take it off that form to then have a chat more in depth about it. But just reaching out to other people and seeing who's interested.
Yeah. So how did you sort of come up with your project, and what was the idea behind it, and what was the project?
Sure. So basically, I was interested in periorbital cellulitis from the point of view, we have a guideline at Alderhay where I work, and we don't totally follow our guideline, because our guideline is one of the few I have discovered in the country that says everybody needs to be admitted. 100%, anyone who arrives with periorbital cellulitis should be admitted. And the consultants in A&E don't really believe that. But the guy, they when they were when the guideline was being written, they were up against the sort of ENT and ophthalmology consultants, and they really pushed for everyone to be admitted. So what we do in Alderhay A&E is we actually don't admit everyone. We discharge lots of people with oral antibiotics. And there's this sort of whispered message that gets passed on when the new juniors arrive each rotation, the two basically ignore the guideline, get a consultant review or senior registrar if it's out of hours, and then that, they can decide whether the patient can go home on oral antibiotics. And I mean, that system does sort of work, but it just, I find it really frustrating that we have a guideline that then we're not following, and we're actually, you know, doing basically the opposite of. So I was thinking, is everyone else in this situation? Is everyone else got a guideline that they're not following, or does do other people have a guideline that more reflects actually what we're doing? And so that was why I put the idea forward, because I just felt like it was something that seemed a bit incongruous, where the guideline wasn't matching up with what we're doing. And also we knew, because we follow kids up, that they did really well on oral antibiotics. So what was the point in admitting them all, you know? So that was why I came up with the idea. And the project itself, we were thinking about doing an audit, a nationwide audit, well, of UK and Ireland. But actually, we decided instead to do a survey of current practice. So we asked each site lead to fill in a survey sort of on behalf of their institution. And then we also asked for any guidelines that anyone had. And then we've assessed those guidelines. So that's what the project took shape into being.
Mm. And how did you sort of go about getting other people's guidelines? Again, was this done all via sort of WhatsApp or email? Or
no, so this was all done by email. And what was great was, because we were using the Pruki network, we just emailed the site leads. And at the time when we put the survey out and the request for guidelines, there was 59 site leads. So I wasn't having to email hundreds of people. It was sort of all doable on a personal level. So I actually sent all of the emails personally rather than sending an email list, and explain what we were doing and ask them to fill in the survey and ask them to complete the send us any guideline they had. And actually we were lucky, we've got a fantastic response from that. So that was great. And it meant that it was quite easy to sort of chase people up as well, because there was a limited number. Plus because these people are all the site leads for Pruki, that means that with that sort of title that they hold, they have an element of responsibility. You know, they don't have to complete everything, but I guess if they didn't complete lots of things that Pruki sent out, you know, it would sort of be picked up on. So that generally they're engaged, they're committed people, they're keen on research themselves. And that means that we got a fantastic response rate, so that was great.
Mm. And as you say, you know, because of how Pruki works and how it operates, I think you know, generally speaking, these people who are leads for these tend to be very enthusiastic and very keen to get it done. And know that, well, if I fill in your survey and complete your paperwork, when it comes around to my project, you're far more likely to do so.
Precisely, and I think that's how we managed to get, because we got an 83% response rate, which was fantastic.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
An important point you make there about sort of sending the emails out individually rather than as a mass list of names, do you think that helped? I mean, it's obviously more time consuming for you.
I think it definitely helped, yeah. I think throughout we tried to have a personalised approach, and I think that made a big difference. Clearly that's not possible if you've got hundreds or thousands of people you're emailing, but because it was manageable, I think it made a big difference, and particularly if I was chasing things up. So when I cleaned the data for the survey, you know, some people had accidentally missed out one question or whatever. In fact, even Damien Rowland, who's the chair of Pruki, had missed a question on the survey. So then I could just email people and say, oh, you know, you've missed this question. Can I ask it to you again? And if you give me your answer, if you just email back your answer, I'll submit it for you. And that was great because it meant that I could clean up the data quite a lot.
Right. And how many sort of questions were you asking, and what kind of questions were you asking?
So we asked quite a lot. I don't actually know the exact figure, but it, actually one thing I've learned from it, if I was doing another survey, I would ask a lot less questions and have a less possible responses, because we did quite a lot of questions, had a Leichhardt scale, you know, where you say, sort of rather than just yes or no, you say, you know, a bit, and then sometimes, often, etc., always. And that made the data, I think, a bit harder to actually interpret. It was quite a long survey. It took about 15 minutes to complete. And there were some issues with that. And again, about people accidentally missing questions or whatever. But we looked at basically the whole interaction you would have with someone with periorbital cellulitis or suspected periorbital cellulitis. So we asked everything from how do you assess severity, what are your indicators for admission, what investigations would you do, what are your indications for sort of CT scan, then looking at how you treat them, what antibiotics you'd use, would you admit them, would you discharge them, if you discharge them, would you do follow-up, all of those kinds of questions. Also looking at subspecialty involvement, so when you would ask for an ENT review or an ophthalmology review, etc. So we asked loads of questions, and we got a you know, really good response of answers, basically.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know, but did you sort of get the impression that these were, that the lead would go away and have a chat amongst their peers, or was it sort of just the individual leads?
So we asked the leads quite clearly to answer, rather than on individual practice, we asked them to answer on what they thought was behalf of their site. Now, how much someone's done that, I think, is really hard to say. And I think that's one of the big limitations of the study, in a way, is that you're going to have that element of bias. But it was hard to look at in otherwise, because I think if we'd opened it up to just everyone and tried to send it out to more people, we probably would have had a lot less good response rate. And we also might have had a lot of people replying from one site and then very few from another. So we tried to just get a sort of representative from each site, but I think that could be an issue with the results.
Okay. And what sort of time period did you collect this over?
So it was over 8 weeks.
So a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, a relatively short period of time. I think it could have been shorter if it wasn't that we started at the end of November. So really the whole Christmas, sort of the 2 to 3 weeks over Christmas, we hardly had any responses. We were hoping to close just before Christmas, but we hadn't had quite as many responses as we like. And then we felt like we should just sort of leave it for the 2 weeks over Christmas, which I think was good because, you know, hardly anybody responded. So then I basically sent out a sort of load of chasing emails in the new year, and we got another sort of big flurry in January.
Okay. So periorbital cellulitis is something that we see in ED very, very commonly, you know, one or two cases every day, potentially. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that there's quite a bit of variability in how people go about assessing and managing and investigating this.
Yeah, huge variation, to be honest, yeah.
Right. And where are you at the moment? Have you looked at all of this and you're in a position to be sort of looking at publishing it at the moment?
Yeah, so we are literally just in our sort of final editing stage, and we're hopefully going to be submitting it in literally in the next sort of couple of weeks. So it has taken quite a long, considering we finished with the survey closed in January, it has taken quite a long time to write up because we had so much information. The survey was long and quite complex, so there was a lot of information to gather from that. And then we were also looking at the data from the guidelines. So we've got back there's 33 of the sites who responded to the survey said that they had a guideline, and we managed to get hold of 31 of those, which is fantastic. So we've also sort of compared and contrasted those 31 guidelines to, we looked at their quality and we also looked at what they contain. So it has been quite a sort of long process to write it all up, but yeah, we're basically at the point of pretty much getting ready to submit in the next couple of weeks now, so that's great.
And with the sort of that information, with that data, do you think that you'll be able to potentially sort of suggest a national guideline, or are you looking sort of at who we think are the best practices from various guidelines?
So I think that it would be, I think what we really need is a national guideline, to be honest, because there are so many guidelines out there. Generally, they were all quite poor quality. If you look at what we judge that against, using the Bright criteria, which is one of the methods to assess guidelines, essentially. And if you imagine that Right criteria, you would score really highly if you looked at a nice guideline. They sort of tick every box because they are, you know, carefully researched and the evidence is all graded, and they have been designed by a committee, and the committee's been, you know, picked to be representative in it, etc. So that was sort of like your gold standard. And then we looked at what all these individual hospital guidelines score, and they all basically score really poorly. So Right would have a total, a maximum score would be 35 if you ticked every box or ticked every criteria, and the mean score for the guidelines we looked at was 6.7. so, you know, like, basically on that Right criteria, it's basically terrible. Now, the question is it realistic that we're going to get a national guideline? I don't know, because I think one of the big problems with periorbital cellulitis is that the evidence is poor. There's not a lot of evidence out there. So, it's what would you really be basing the guideline on? And I think that is the crux of the problem, is that everyone's doing different things because there isn't really evidence to say what to do. So I think it would be great if some research could come from this. That would be fantastic, because then if we got some better answers, I think we could then have a better guideline, you know. But even in the meantime, or if that doesn't happen, then yes, I think some sort of guideline to suggest what is pragmatically the best approach is reasonable. Because as I say, like, even, you know, in Alder Hey, I could say, well, we're only 10% of the guideline. We're only 10% of the guidelines said that you can't send people home on oral antibiotics. You know, the rest of the country essentially is doing something different to us. Why don't we follow that at least?
Yeah. And I wonder, is there sort of a significant variability in actually who's written the guideline? Does that cause a problem? You know, is it being written by ENT? Is it being written by ophthalmology? Is it being written by PEDS?
Yeah, well, so that's interesting. And a few of the guidelines, you could get a feel for that, because it would say, and so there was the odd guideline that was said who had written it and said ENT surgeon and an ophthalmologist and a general paediatrician or whatever. So you felt like you'd got a sort of representative body. But the problem is most of the guidelines were of a quality that they didn't even say who'd written them, or they said the name of who'd written them, but they didn't say their job role. So it was, you know, it was really very difficult to say even who they'd been written by, to be honest.
Yeah. And I also wonder, just sort of thinking off the top of my head, whether when you're sort of reading around this, whether there's also significant variability between practice in this country versus, say, Australia or North America.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something we specifically looked at, but yes, I think there could well be. There probably is.
Yeah. So what's next? It's sort of finally writing up and then hopefully publishing it somewhere. Yeah.
Yes, that is the plan. And we haven't planned to go on to anything else from this, specifically with periorbital cellulitis, although it definitely has thrown up some good research questions. But yeah, I think it would be, I just want to get this submitted basically before I think about jumping into anything else.
Yes. And then looking back, for somebody, the thing that sort of struck me when I was listening to your presentation was that you weren't somebody who'd done, you know, masses and masses and masses and loads of publications, but it's something that struck you as interesting and you stuck your hand up in the air and said, yes, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's it. So I haven't precisely, I mean, I've done what I think a lot of people, you know, I've done a few posters and et cetera, and I've done a few blogs for Arkham and things like that, but hadn't done any research per se at all. And it was one of the things that I really felt that I would like to get involved with, but it's just so hard to know who to approach or what to do, really. And even as a grid trainee staying in one hospital for longer, I think it's hard to just know how to get involved with something. So when it came up, I was just keen straight away, and I thought, oh yeah, that would be fantastic. So put myself forward. And then it's just been great because we've had Tom on the team with us, Tom Waterfield, who was the old trainee representative and who is doing a PhD. And he's been fantastic because although he's a trainee, he has got loads of research experience, so he's been able to really help. And then we had both Damien Rowland, and who's current Pooriki chair, and Mark Little, who's the past chair for Pooriki, who were also on our team as the executive members. And they have been amazing, giving us ideas. So everything's sort of been led by us and come from us, but then they've been able to support that and actually give us advice about how things are workable and how best to approach people or how to get the best response rates and things. And so it's felt very supported.
Yeah. And to sort of just, I guess, round up, what sort of conclusions would you make from this experience, or what lessons have you learned from this whole experience?
So I would say that just put yourself out there and get involved with things. Make links via social media or locally, if you know people locally, and just ask around and try and get involved with something. And then if you can, think about, try and think of a question that frustrates you at work or you know, you find interesting for some reason. Because I think coming up with a good project is key, and also something that there is a sort of question around. So yeah, and then just ask for plenty of help. That would be the other thing I would say. I've just been really honest at every stage and said, can you either check the proposal or can you give me advice about this? Because if you ask for help, people are always keen to give it rather than struggling on your own. So I think, yeah, those are the main things. And I think if you take the plunge and you get involved, you'd be amazed how supported it is and how much people are willing to help you and get these projects rolling.
Perfect. I think we're quite lucky in this country in that, you know, Pooriki is a very supportive and very enthusiastic network.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. They're fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And both the exec are brilliant, but also the site leads are fantastic. And the members are amazing. So they're brilliant at giving advice. One of the things that's great is that all of the proposals for studies go out to the research steering committee, which is mainly the site leads, although not exactly. And they give advice and feedback. So we had some fantastic feedback from them before the survey went out live. We got advice from them so we could do a lot of editing. And that was really, really helpful.
Perfect. Mariel, that's been really interesting, really fascinating to listen to you again. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.